Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com. We also archive these programs. They are at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we also link to our guests' website, and we'll be giving you that in just a little bit as we get ourselves underway. And I have to tell you that when I found out about my guest today and I found out about our subject matter, the only thing that I could, the thing that came to mind first, and I thought, I'm going to lead with this, is this.
Oh, the pain. The pain.
Oh, the pain. The pain.
I know that's dating me, but that's from Lost in Space, Dr. Smith, and his Oh, the Pain. If it isn't one thing, it's another with him. Usually it was his back. Our guest today is going to be talking about pain. We're talking about the latest work, Wired Healing, and it is remapping the brain to recover from chronic and mysterious illnesses, but also dealing with the issue of pain. And we're very happy to have Annie Hopper on the program today. Annie, thank you for joining us here.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Richard. It's my pleasure to talk to you.
It's one of those issues that obviously it's in the forefront of everybody's minds these days, especially from a governmental slash insurance kind of thing. And I remember growing up, being told that, you need to take care of yourself today because you're not going to be able to tomorrow if you didn't today do those things that kept you healthy and well. Of course, we also talk about the issue of quality of life. And I'm now in my late 50s, 57, and I'm sitting here going, boy, I hope I did all the right things. And then I go to my doctor, and I have all of the battery of tests for my annual physical. And they, okay, here are the things that you need to deal with that are issues. They never say, here's what's wrong with you. They just say, here are your issues, the conditions that you need to keep in mind. And I remember when I was first diagnosed with hypertension or high blood pressure, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 years ago, and that was after we moved to Santa Barbara. You would think that moving to Paradise, I wouldn't have high blood pressure. I lived in Phoenix, for God's sakes. One of the 15 largest cities in the country, you'd think that's where I would have developed it. Needless to say, they ran a battery of tests. They checked all the fluids, rotated the tires, et cetera, found basically nothing that could contribute to it. I said, you're not going to find it. I could have told you that before you ran the tests. I said, it's not in the biology. It's in the psychology. Because I knew that I was having a little difficulty dealing with the drivers out here. And, and those types of things. People doing stupid things. And what the heck are you doing? Just kind of wasn't road rage. Don't get me wrong. But still, that can tend to raise your blood pressure. So I'm still working on that. You have been working on telling people and researching and investigating this whole aspect of, as the subtitle says, remapping the brain. And I've heard that there are a lot of different ways to do it for a lot of different reasons. We've had guests on the program, one in particular who in England teaches supports a school that teaches Sanskrit that is supposed to help to sort of remap the neural pathways in the brain for maybe greater thinking or creativity or what have you. There's NLP, there's just a myriad of different things for doing this. Can we talk? Let's start about this whole aspect of the remapping, the rewriting the pathways, if you will, if that's in fact what we're talking about here. And then we'll jump into this aspect of how this is going to affect our health and wellness.
Sure, Richard. Well, I'd like to start with actually just talking about the brain. And what you were referring to earlier is what we typically call the mind-body connection. But I'm going to call it something different. We're just going to call it the brain-body connection because the brain is the ultimate center for healing. It's the guy in charge. It's the gal in charge that is sending messages to all other systems of the body. And, prior to the latest, 20 years, we thought that the brain was hardwired. meaning the, you know, the number of cells that we were born with would be the number of cells that we would have for the rest of our lives. And once brain cells died or an area was injured, then that was it. You know, there was no recovery or neurogenesis was not possible. But now we know that not only is the brain duplicating and making more neurons through the course of our lifetime, but it's also capable of changing. And that's the greatest breakthrough in neuroplasticity in the last 400 years, is that capacity for the brain to change. And when we know, you know, it's interesting because where I focus is really looking at how the brain and the neural networks of the brain have been changed through trauma and various forms of trauma that we can get into later. But also, if the brain has been changed through trauma and it's affecting many systems of your body because of that, because again, it's the person in charge, it's the CEO of your body, is it possible that the brain can also be changed in a positive way to assist with the, in the recovery process in many chronic and mysterious illnesses?
And there are a lot of them, too. And there's some of them are so mysterious we don't even know we have them until, in some cases, it's sort of too late. Go ahead.
Yeah, true enough. You know, some of the conditions, the most common conditions that we deal with are things like chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, multiple chemical sensitivities, anxiety, chronic pain, food sensitivities, electromagnetic sensitivities, just a host of sensitivities, plus anxiety or people who just kind of worry a lot, those kinds of things, and even into irritable bowel syndrome and Lyme disease. So it's really, you know, a lot of people don't even know that they're ill. They just kind of have vague symptoms, or, you know, maybe they've been to a doctor and they've been lucky enough to get diagnosed, but, you know, oftentimes it happens even with the diagnosis and even with going both through both the conventional medical system and the alternative medical system, they're still left feeling very sick. So, there's tons of people. I know in Canada, in 2014, they did a Canada Stats survey, and they found that 1.4 million Canadians were suffering from either chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, or multiple chemical sensitivities. Now, if those numbers equate into the States, and we have every reason to believe that they will, that equates to 13 million people. So 13 million people are out there suffering, and a lot of them don't even know what they have.
Well, the whole worry thing—that's more, genetics. That's Irish. I worry all the time, and they say that's because I'm Irish. I can't cure that. How do I rewire that? Or getting into brawls on occasion. I love the old saying. You know, yes, the Irish they will drink and fight all Saturday and Saturday night, and then go to mass on Sunday, and it's all good. But
that's a good point.
But it's one of those things where. I was 15, and I remember, again, thinking about all of this at that time, especially when I would walk anywhere around some of the malls and what have you, and I'd see some of these old guys hunched over. Some of them had canes, and I swore I would never, ever. I would rather die than spend the rest of my latter years hunched over, just kind of moving slowly across the floor. But then I began to become a little more sensitive to their plight, and I used to ask myself, what kind of burden have they been carrying that has caused them to hunch over like that? Now, you could probably sit here and list all kinds of different medical issues. You know, maybe they have scoliosis. Maybe they have osteoporosis. Maybe they have this condition and that condition and the other condition. But when we're talking about our health and wellness, there is a huge mental/psychological element, isn't there? I mean, we're talking here about the brain.
Yeah, there is a psychological element to that. But it's interesting because a lot of people, it brings me back to trauma, because trauma is at the heart of it. And trauma changes the brain. And does trauma have effect on our psychological state? Absolutely. But let's back up to trauma for a second and how it affects the brain. So we have various forms of trauma, right? You could have a physical trauma, like a car accident where you hurt your neck, or perhaps you're experiencing emotional stress or psychological stress, or you have a bacteria or a virus, or you have some kind of chemical exposure. Now, all of that can be toxic to the brain. Now, basically, you know, when we look at people that, you know, have a lot of these illnesses, they have a combination of different stressors that have affected them in their life. So it wouldn't be unusual for someone to have, you know, a virus that they felt like they never really fully recovered from, or maybe they had, they were traveling and they caught some, got some bacterial infection while they were gone away, or, you know, they've just gone through a divorce and they've moved into a new home where they have all of these really, you know, this really lovely new house that's off-gassing everything, from the paints to the carpets to all of the furniture to all of that. So all of those stressors, individually and collectively, have the ability to actually structurally change the brain. So meaning that it can create trauma in the brain. And when that happens, the fight or flight mechanisms in the brain get triggered, and that's just for our basic self-protection. And when the fight or flight sensors of the brain get triggered, it's going to make you think certain things, because you can imagine that if you're in fight or flight, it's certainly going to make you think. It's going to affect your thoughts. So in that way, there is a psychological component. So sure, if we worry a lot, and when we worry a lot, or, you know, we're in anxiety or fear, that itself has an effect on the brain too. So those emotions themselves can be toxic to the brain. So I've got a really interesting story about that. You know, this is a little while back with Leonardo DiCaprio in his role when he was portraying Howard Hughes in the movie The Aviator. I don't know if you saw that.
I did indeed, yes.
Yeah, and, you know, he did such a great job at character acting. And when Leonardo DiCaprio was studying for this role, he studied under Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz, who's basically like the guru of obsessive-compulsive disorder. So Jeffrey Schwartz taught Leonardo, you know, how Howard Hughes would think, how he would feel, and how he would behave. And Leonardo did such a fantastic job at character acting that he actually developed OCD.
Oh, jeez.
Just from character acting.
That's so, getting into your role.
Yeah, and it was rumored that he had to work with Jeffrey Schwartz for a year after he finished the role to undo what he had done to his brain just through character acting.
Wow.
So yes, our thoughts, our feelings, our behaviors really act back on the brain to change brain structure and function. But, you know, I'd like to start with, I think that for people that have these kinds of illnesses, what's really important to hear is that it's really not their fault. You know, the brain has been put through some form of trauma, and as a result of that trauma, it's gone into this maladaptive chronic stress response, or this fight or flight response in an innate attempt to protect them. But it's an unconscious thing, and they really don't know what's happening. Once the brain is in that state, of course, it's going to make us think and feel and behave in certain ways, and that kind of perpetuates the whole, what we call a limbic system trauma loop, or that kind of fight or flight loop. But initially, usually it's not what they're thinking to begin with. They're just, you know, for someone who has constant, like, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio in his role of Howard Hughes, for someone with OCD, it's not that they want to have those thoughts of worry or fear. It's that the brain is stuck. The brain is actually in a hiccup. There's a part of the brain not working functionally that makes them have those thoughts and feelings. So if you can correct the brain mechanism, then you don't have the thoughts and feelings anymore.
Interesting. So it, you know, on the one hand, you know, we've talked many times on this program about, you know, taking personal responsibility for one's actions and so forth and so on. And yet at the same time, there is, as you are sharing with us, a great deal of support for that certain element, if you will, of our certain elements we don't have control over, you know.
Yeah, there are things that there are absolutely things in our environment that are toxic. Absolutely, that's the truth, right? So yeah.
And sometimes
it's an interesting conversation. Sorry for interrupting, but
no.
You know, I think we've gone from this place of having zero responsibility to being over accountable for everything that's happened, right? Like, you know, I don't know, like in some new thought kind of realms, we think, well, if something's happening, then we must have created that, we must have manifested that, we must have thought ourselves into it, or we did something to attract this into our lives. And, you know, I really don't believe in all cases that's true, especially when you're talking about, you know, trauma that's happened to your brain and how it's manifesting. And I think when we start looking for answers, we'll look everywhere. And this is kind of someplace, looking at brain trauma isn't typically where people have been looking. So I'm hoping to introduce a new idea where they can look. It still means they're going to have to be accountable because, you know, it takes a lot of work to actually remap the brain through your conscious awareness. But the fact that the brain went through trauma to begin with, I don't think is their fault, yeah.
I know that that's, you know, the age-old conversation, you know, about what is it that creates the person that we are. Is it biology or is it environment? And, well, I think that the real answer is it's both. I mean, that's just the way that it is because we are influenced by our environment. But at the same time, we come into this world with a particular set of information, i.e. DNA, and, you know, the whole chemistry aspect that we inherit from our ancestors through our parents. I think that's another element, too, that I find interesting. And it's not exactly reincarnation per se, but the reality is that we are a compilation of all of our ancestors. I don't know how far back, if it goes back to person one, you know, or patient, what is it called? Patient one or patient zero or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, unless we can start to understand all of that, you know, we kind of flounder. And we, a matter of fact, I was watching this piece with Morgan Freeman. He was talking about his program that he does, this science program about the wormhole. I cannot remember the title. All I know is he was talking about how the conversation was specifically around people who are in poverty throughout their entire lives and other people who are very wealthy and so forth. And the comment made that, well, you know, is that genetics and so forth and so on? And basically he says, no, anybody can pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. Well, maybe on an economic level they can, but what about on a biological level? You know, are there ways to counter some of this DNA information that we have inherited and undo it? And that's what you're talking about in this book, Wired Healing. And I'd like to for us to touch upon, start diving into that as we go into our second segment, if we can do that, Annie.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Wonderful. We're talking with the author, as I've already mentioned, of Wired Healing, Annie Hopper, and it is mapping the brain, remapping the brain to recover from chronic and mysterious illnesses. And I have to say that I've often used the comparison of the computer in that, you know, we can go in there and we can what they call F-disking or reformatting the hard drive and then reinstalling all of the software and starting over again. If you get a virus, or as I was doing when I first got into computers, I was deleting files I didn't think I needed, but I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And so I'd go reboot the computer and it wouldn't work. And I don't understand. I didn't do anything wrong. I just deleted some files I thought shouldn't be there. Turns out they were critical files I was deleting. But the brain, you can't just reboot it. And that's a question I'm going to put to you when we come back. Or can we reboot it? I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. New paradigms for a new world. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm here with Annie Hopper, and she is the author of Wired Healing. We're also talking about this whole aspect of, you know, sort of rewriting the software, maybe. We'll find out if that's, you know, if that's part of the process. I know that when computer programs are installed onto computers, onto hard drives, it takes, I don't know what exactly the time frame is, but it takes some time for that software to actually sort of be burned into and make itself really resident on that hard drive. And, well, we've got those kinds of programs from not only our current life, but from the DNA, the information that we've inherited. Annie, I'm curious about, let's start from a different tack here. You've got some special programs and things that you have going on that you've got coming up in October. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure, Richard. Thanks for asking. So after I recovered from a series of chronic and mysterious illnesses through neuroplasticity and through creating a program that worked for myself, I developed a program that would work for other people based on my own experience. And so in 2008, I developed a program called the Dynamic Neural Retraining System. And it's a what we call a five-day interactive training seminar. And we refer to this as neuroplasticity boot camp. Basically, what I teach people is how to rewire the limbic system in the brain. So, like you said, how to change the software, how to reboot the brain so that they can get out of that cycle of chronic illness. And we have a program coming up in Ojai, California, from October 22nd to October 26th. And that's listed on my website at retrainingthebrain.com. So if people want information about the cost of the program or how to attend the program, then they could go to the website to sign up. And we only take a limited number of people. We only accept 20 people into the program because it's quite intensive work. And, the results are nothing but amazing. But from my perspective, and of course I'm going to say that, but, yeah, I mean, when people ask me what I do, I get to say, well, I'm in the glorious position of witnessing medical miracles every day. So, yeah, we have a program coming up in Ojai, October 22nd to the 26th. And if people want to know more about it, they can go to retrainingthebrain.com.
You also have, in relation to this particular work, a website which is Wired for Health, for Healing. Title of the book, wiredforhealing.com. And maybe I have to have some rewiring done there from my mouth for a little while here. But this is fascinating. Now, this program that you're not just the one that you're offering here, but obviously it's offered throughout the year and in different parts of the country, I'm sure. I've been through intensives, but you know, 5-day intensives. You go Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. You're exhausted, but you're charged and you're ready to go. And it's personal growth and development. That's what this was for me. It sounds similar in that sense, but here you are literally teaching people how to, as you say, you know, rewire, if you will, or rewrite the software in the brain. Is this rewriting or is this more upgrade? 2.0, 3.0 kind of thing? How in those terms, how would we be looking at this?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think that in some ways it's about rewriting and rebooting, although I don't know a lot about computer language. So first I'll tell you, I don't know a lot about computer language. But what I can tell you is that the brain actually gets stuck in this fight-or-flight mechanism. And when the brain is stuck in this fight-or-flight mechanism, it causes all kinds of systems in the body to do strange things. So one thing it causes is inflammation and pain. What it can also cause is distorted sensory perception, so people will get a heightened sense of smell, or they'll become sensitive to perfumes and colognes, or sensitive to light and sound, and sensitive to food. They'll have unwanted thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, like they might, you know, be in cycles of fear or anxiety or worry. And so, you know, when we teach people how to rewire the limbic system of the brain, which, by the way, the 5 days is just kind of the introduction. This is what you're going to need to do for at least the next 6 months for an hour every day. So the 5 days is not going to be enough to remap the brain in that way, but it will give you the foundation of the information and the exercises that they will need to do and what they'll have to keep in mind. So it's a little bit of a, I'm not sure what to compare it to in terms of software. Yeah, we're changing the programs for sure, but I think the difference in the computer analogy is, you know, with a computer, you don't have the ability to create new wires. and create new components. Whereas
right.
with neuroplasticity and remapping the brain, we're actually structurally changing the brain and actually getting new neural pathways to start forming. So that's really neat, because not only are we remapping and, you know, restructuring the brain, but we're actually, you know, getting the brain to start to produce more pathways and new pathways. So we really teach people how to block old neural pathways that are associated with disease patterns in the brain that are sending all of the alarm messages to the rest of the systems of the body, and then really looking at how do you strengthen new brain patterns that will lead to optimal health. So those are really the two components that we're looking at.
In regards to what you've just shared, is there or are there tests that have been done that actually show this remapping, this physical remapping?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, there's all kinds of tests that other people have. We don't necessarily have the test, but we're working on some brain studies with some Canadian universities that will show that. So for people that come into the program, they have a brain scan before they start the program, and then 6 months later, they have another brain scan to show the changes that have happened in the brain and how that's affecting some major systems of the body with those changes in the brain. So that's in the works in terms of the research that we're doing. However, other people have had all kinds of brain scans, right? There's all kinds of brain scans about meditation, how meditation changes the brain. So we know that mindfulness in itself actually can change the brain, and that's already, we already have lots of evidence around that. We're still looking at the evidence to prove that this does change the brain.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at, I forget what I was going to say there, but yeah, I remember. So, if you did want to get a brain scan to see if these areas of your brain aren't working, then it would probably cost you, I'm guessing, between $3,000 and $4,000. So basically, you know, what people really go by right now is a collection of symptoms, right? So how do you know maybe that the limbic system in your brain, which is in the midbrain, and it's it's known as the feeling and reacting brain, and one of its jobs is to filter the billions of bits of sensory information and emotional information that we receive at any given time. And what it basically does is sort that information into two very distinct categories. It would be threat or no threat, or said another way, safe or unsafe. We can imagine if that area of the brain is no longer functioning properly because of some form of trauma, that it might be distorting information. And that's, how can you tell when if that might be happening to your brain? So there are some questions that we have on our website. It's a self-assessment questionnaire that people might be able to look at to ask themselves, could this be actually happening in my brain? The other thing is they might have gone to their doctors and they have their adrenal glands aren't working functionally very well, or they have really high adrenals. Here are some common symptoms. It says, do you experience brain fog or an inability to concentrate or focus? Do you suffer from low energy? Do you have chronic joint pain or muscle pain? Do you have a heightened sense of smell or taste? Or do you have any other kind of heightened sensitivities, like sensitivities to light, sound, electromagnetic sensitivities, or food sensitivities? Do perfumes or chemical products give you headaches or make you feel nauseous or lightheaded? Do you noticeably get irritable, anxious, or upset when you're around specific stimuli? Here's a good one. Have you had your home, office, or other space renovated recently? Because sometimes just when you've had a renovation, all of the volatile organic compounds that are off-gassing from all of the new products can actually create brain trauma. Do you suffer from anxiety or panic attacks, or do you have sleep-related issues? It just goes on and on. And a lot of it is, have you been to see a lot of medical practitioners and you've exhausted yourself. You've tried medications, you've tried supplementation, you've tried a lot of different treatments, and yet still there's something going wrong. You're not able to get well, or your health is still deteriorating. That could be a really big sign that your brain is stuck in that flight or flight response, and there's a disease pattern happening in the brain now that is affecting all systems of the body. And, you know, I like to think of, you know, there's a really good analogy when that fight or flight mechanism is stuck. It's kind of like, you know, if you're in fight or flight and you're running away from a tiger, you know, all you would want to do is, if there's a tiger chasing you, you are running for your life, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're not texting your friends, you're not phoning your mom to say, hey, I'm running from a tiger. You're just running.
Or taking selfies.
You're taking a selfie, right? So, you know, and that speaks to communication. So communication shuts down when you're in fight or flight. So that means communication between your cells actually starts to shut down. And there's something called a cell danger response that's happening there, which is really interesting. There's some really interesting new research out about the cell danger response. But also what happens, you can imagine if you're running away from a tiger, you know, you're not worried about eating. In fact, there's no time to eat. There's no time to absorb nutrients. So, you know, people start to get problems with their digestive system and their ability to absorb nutrients. They also start having sleep problems because you can imagine, you know, when you're running away from a tiger, you're not going to be able to sleep. So other things that start to other systems that are affected, as well as your detoxification system. So again, elimination is not important when you're running away from the tiger. So for someone who's stuck in chronic fight or flight, even though you know, the initial trauma has ended, in a normal brain, we'll go back into a regular resting state, a state of you know, growth and regeneration again. We go back into that state of rest and digestion, and everything returns to normal. But when somebody is stuck in chronic fight or flight, that doesn't happen. So it's as if we take the tiger home with us. So not only, you know, we've invited the tiger home with us, we've invited the tiger to have a seat at the dinner table with us, and we invite the tiger into our bedroom at night. So, you know, again, it's really easy to see why people start having sleep issues and digestive issues and detoxification issues and actually brain issues, communication issues, and brain fog. You know, it also starts to affect some our immune systems, our ability to fight disease. It affects our endocrine system, which is like our internal chemist that's releasing hormones all of the time. So, you know, we have hormone imbalances, and it starts to affect our autonomic nervous system too, which is stuff that regulates like your heart rate and your blood pressure. So it's really across the board. So I would say to people, if you have, go to our website. There is on retrainingthebrain.com, and there's a section under the program, and it says self-assessment questionnaire. And again, it has a series of questions, and they'll be able to see whether this, you know, might be happening with their situation.
Wow. my brain just went into a fog, although we get that here often on the Santa Barbara coast, because so many questions come racing in as you're sharing there. And I'm curious about a certain aspect of our population at large. When an individual who lives in fairly good health into their hundreds, they're often asked, so what is it that you did that, you know, gave you this longevity and again, relatively good health? I mean, they're still, you know, ambulatory. They're moving about and doing this and that and the other. And a lot of them, well, one cigar, a shot of vodka, and, you know, those kinds of sort of flip but maybe serious comments. And then you have people who have chosen to take up the vegan, plant-based diet life, live off the grid, live out in rural wherever, you know, hundreds of miles away from civilization and so on and so forth. They die of a heart attack at 62. And yet supposedly they've been doing everything right to stay healthy and well, and they drop. You know, I think of one guy I used to watch. My mother used to watch him, and I would watch he and she exercise. This was a television program, Jack LaLanne. And I think he lived into his 90s, if I'm not mistaken. And with the exception of death, he was pretty healthy right up to the end, you know. And you know, like I said before, we have all of these different stories that come out of those who live 100 plus and, you know, so forth, and others who die early. And it's like, wait a minute, but you did all of these things. You're taking all these supplements. You're doing yoga and meditation, and you're exercising regularly. And you sit there going, what the heck went wrong? It doesn't seem to me like that lifestyle worked. Is it because they did not sort of remap the synapses, if you will, in the brain to have a healthier outlook, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, it's
yeah. I think it's a really great question. I don't know if it's about a healthier outlook, although that does come into play. But it could be that their system was stuck in fight or flight to no fault of their own, and they were doing some really great things to try to take care of themselves, like doing yoga and doing meditation and watching what they eat. Which is like, that's like a lot of people that end up at our program, is they're doing everything that they can to get better health, to maintain whatever health that they can. And if your system's still stuck in that fight or flight response, it doesn't matter, because, again, remember, the body thinks that the tiger's still there, or the brain thinks that the tiger's still there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can be physically fit, and still if the fight or flight response is stuck, it's going to affect a lot of systems. So, you know, meditation isn't going to necessarily change that fight or flight mechanism. Yoga is not going to change that fight or flight mechanism. Nutrition isn't going to change that fight or flight mechanism. Although they're really good support for the mind and body, mm-hmm. it doesn't specifically address that mechanism in the brain. So the second thing I thought of while you were talking is, you know, people live to old age and some of them drink and smoke and they're fine. And I think positive attitude is a huge thing. You know, it's interesting. The brain has a natural negativity bias, which means that we will notice what is going wrong more so than what is going right. And that's just an old self-protective mechanism. Mm-hmm. We had to be more alert of any kind of prey than it was more important to realize when we were in danger than it was to stop and smell the roses, basically. So that's how our brains were wired from way back in caveman days, and that's still how our brains are wired. So it actually takes more energy to notice what's going well. It takes more conscious effort to actually notice what's going well. But in the moments, in our moment-to-moment times in our life when we can just stop and really appreciate things and savor the good, and this is something that Rick Hansen calls savoring the good. He wrote a book called Hardwiring Happiness. When you savor the good, you can actually act back on your brain to start changing those neural circuits. Now, I think in general, that's a really, really great way to live life, is to really savor the good. And don't worry as much. Don't be in fear as much, or anxiety. However, again, if the brain is stuck in that fight or flight mechanism, positive thinking alone will not change the brain.
Okay. Another related question. The brains of people, and again, I realize these scans, you don't necessarily regularly do them, but is there a significant physical difference before and after pictures, I guess is what I'm asking, of people who go through your program, or for that matter, even people who don't? Maybe, hey, we're going to scan your brain. We just want to see where you're at, you know, and this is what it's for and so forth. And then you scan the people who go through your program, your course, and sort of compare. Even though everybody's brain is different, everybody's body, we're all individuals, but there are certain similarities. And I'm curious, I don't know if you've done the research or if other people have done the research to compare, if you will, the before and after.
No, that's what the university will be doing, but I can tell you exactly what they'll find, and this is what, based on what I know to be true of the limbic system, what I know to be true of the brain, and what I can see is changing in the expression of people's health. I mean, that's really the outcome is like, how are these people's lives changing as a result of rewiring this part of the brain? And that is the proof in the pudding. So, yes, we can take the brain scans to show the physical pictures about how the brain is changing, but the proof in the pudding is, how are these people's lives changing because of that? So what I think what they will find in brain scans is a decrease of activation of a part of the brain called the amygdala, which is the fear center in the limbic system.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we'll really see a deactivation of the amygdala, where, you know, it won't be firing as rapidly. Maybe the actual structure will actually get smaller. We'll see an increase in firing in the prefrontal cortex, which is your executive thinking. So, you know, the executive function comes more back online. So for sure, we'll see those two areas changing. that's what I would think. But again, going back to, so what are their outcomes from taking the program? Well, that's where it gets really interesting, and that's why, it's just mind-boggling how rewiring the brain or remapping the limbic system can change your physical health. You know, in my book, Wired for Healing, Remapping the Brain to Recover from Chronic and Mysterious Illnesses, you know, I talk about the science about the program, that I've developed. I talk about my own history of illness and how I developed the program, and then I talk about other people who have actually gone through the program, who had really, really awful illnesses. And, you know, the one story about the proof in the pudding that I'll share with you is about Lauren. And Lauren was only, you know, fairly young at the time. I think she was 18 or 19 years old. And Lauren had been to the Mayo Clinic, and she'd been sick for a number of years. I think it was probably about 5 years at this point. And one of her major conditions was postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. So basically what that means is every time she went to stand up, her heart rate would skyrocket and her blood pressure would drop. And it became so bad that she was actually unable to stand up at all. And she couldn't walk anymore. And so she had to live her life in a reclining wheelchair. She also became sensitive to a whole lot of things like chemicals and food sensitivities and light sensitivities and sound sensitivities. And she had chronic pain. She had sleep problems. And when she started taking the program, she actually did, I forgot to tell you, we also have a 14-hour instructional DVD. So Lauren first got the 14-hour instructional DVD, and her father manipulated the DVD so that he could decrease the volume and the rate of my speech so that Lauren could hear it without being in pain. So she started to recover a little bit just through that. And then she came to one of our 5-day interactive training programs, and you can imagine she comes in, she's in a wheelchair, her life force doesn't seem very great, and she can't eat food. Her mom has to blend all of her food and basically feed her almost like a baby. And she went through the program, and what I can tell you is Lauren is now 100% healthy, 100% recovered. In fact, she went from being in a wheelchair to rollerblading within a month. There is nothing that does that besides the brain.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, you talk about the change, the way these people's lives are changed. We're not just talking about their physical health. You know, because if you change, can't help it, gonna go back to the computer analogy. With a computer, yeah, you can uninstall and reinstall and so forth. We're talking here with the brain about, and I want to talk a little more about the limbic system, because what do I know? I'm not a doctor, but I play one when I produce radio programs. That you can change the peripherals. You can change the keyboard, the mouse, the monitor. You can change out the sound card, the video card. You can change all of those different peripherals, as they call them. But the hard drive and the processor, they're still, well, you can even change out the processor, i.e. you could get a heart transplant and so forth. But you can't transplant the brain. You can't get a new one, you know, and start over again. It doesn't work that way. But when you do change these peripherals, maybe upgrading to a higher resolution screen or a wireless mouse and keyboard or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, on infinitum, your productivity on that machine can conceivably go up. which means you can do more things, which means you can accomplish. And said, so when a person has their brain remapped, does this process facilitate, I'm going to say metaphorically speaking or euphemistically speaking, the changing out of the peripherals, in terms of the, maybe their lifestyle, not necessarily you get the health going and boy, they become wealthy and they become successful and all of these things. But, I mean, you've talked about this one gal and that's astounding. I mean, really, I rollerbladed once to work one day. Never did it again because unless there were sidewalks all the way, I was rollerblading on asphalt. Ooh. But what about that aspect of, in the general sense, people then realizing, oh my gosh, I have tapped into my life's purpose. I know what it is that I want to do. And I can do it now because I'm not being hampered by the symptoms that I've been experiencing of sore feet and dizziness and et cetera, on infinitum. Are these the kinds of, shall we say, miraculous happenings that you've seen happen?
Sure, absolutely. And, I think that, when you're chronically ill, when you're suffering from a chronic illness, it takes all of your energy, right? People are just trying to get through another day. It's like, how do I manage my illness? How do I manage this illness? How can I cope with this illness? So when you don't have illness anymore, it frees up a lot of brain space, a lot of energy, a lot of time, because then you don't have to worry about your health anymore. So then you have these whole new set of things that you can think about, like what healthy people think about, like, what am I going to do? Where am I going to take a holiday? What would I like to do with my life? What would I like to do for work? So then you have all of these other kind of questions that are available to you. And it doesn't mean that you're going to find the answers right away because, you know, for most of us, it takes time to kind of, you know, figure out what we want to do with our lives and what our life purpose is. But at least it gives you the option. You now have that option and that choice to live life as a healthy person. Hmm. And that is, that's a completely different life, really.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, and of course, what we're all about here is giving people choices and knowledge of those choices to help make their dreams come true. But you're not going to do it. And they say this quite often, you know, if you have your health, you have everything. Well, honestly, it's true. And by the way, I am also one of those people who is very much very conscious when things are going well. I used to have serious problems with gout and pain in my feet. I still experience issues with... I want to call it delayed bruising. I will be out working in the yard and I will be, let's just say, shoveling. And I use my foot to stomp down get the spade into the ground and till up the dirt and what have you. It's 2 or 3 days later and all of a sudden the arch of my foot is hurting. Now, I'm not doing this barefoot and I have a pair of shoes on, but I still have that issue. When I don't have those conditions, I'm going to tell you, I am very aware of, I'm going to be walking down to the beach from the office. Takes me 20 minutes. I'm not taking the trolley. I am just excited about getting out there. And it's, I've talked to people about this, whether it's my car and I get a repair job, it's like getting a new vehicle. When I'm feeling good like that and that symptom has gone away and I'm feeling good, I feel like, 17 again. Not that I'm going to do things when I was 17, but I'm very much there. I'm very much aware when life is good, and mm-hmm. and you're talking about that and getting people. That's part of the sort of the remapping is that perspective. Don't focus on when you're not feeling good. Granted, you've got to deal with that, but then when you get back to that healthy state. Celebrate that.
Yes, celebrate your successes for sure. And, you know, remapping the limbic system is a process. It doesn't happen overnight. It is something that people have to work at, and they have to work at it daily for at least 6 months. And there are a lot of elements to the program, and changing the way that you think is a small part of that. But, you know, five pillars of recovery, so to speak. You know, first of all, you have to recognize that it's limbic system impairment, that your brain has actually been affected. And because your brain, that fight or flight mechanism, is firing all the time, that it's expressing in certain ways. And certain physical ways and certain patterns in your body, patterns in thoughts and feelings and behaviors. So, you know, we look at, okay, what does this look like? And how can you become more aware of that? And then how can you become aware of what those patterns are and start changing those patterns?
Mm-hmm.
And we give people the tools to structurally and chemically act back on the brain. So, you know, so that we can change those circuits in the brain. Then we teach people how to incrementally train the brain, which means it's a form of neural shaping, which is a tool to strengthen alternative neural pathways. And, we advise them and educate them on how our thoughts and feelings actually affect the brain. And here's how you could redirect so that your brain will take alternate pathways, and then really emphasize that this is not an overnight fix.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that you have to work at day after day after day. But when you see those small moments in time where you know, and for most people it's like a moment of not noticing symptoms all of a sudden, like maybe they run up the stairs because they're, you know, they have an appointment and they need to brush their teeth. So they run up the stairs, and then they realize after they've run up the stairs, they go, oh my goodness, I just ran up the stairs and my knees don't hurt. That was that's miraculous.
Yeah.
So it's more of a not noticing. So those not noticing moments begin to stitch together. And those moments of feeling better begin to stitch together. And those small moments in time, actually, when you stitch them together, form the fabric of your recovery. Mm-hmm. So it's not always a linear process where, you know, you're not feeling good and all of a sudden you're feeling great.
Right.
It's going to, the recovery does have an ebb and flow, but the overall trajectory is feeling better and rewiring the brain. And our focus isn't even on symptoms anymore. Our focus is strictly on, okay, how do we correct it? How do we redirect the brain? How do we focus on really strengthening alternative neural circuitry so that the brain can get out of that chronic disease pattern?
So you're rewiring the brain and the symptoms will follow or drop away.
Yeah, that's right.
Hmm. Interesting. That's fascinating stuff. I am just intrigued beyond belief as to what you have discovered. And the thing is, it's always been there. In one sense, it's nothing new. It's just that you have done the research, you've done the study, you have done the classes, you've worked with people, you've seen the changes in their lives. And, of course, that's what we're about here, is helping people to change their lives, to come to a space where, again, they can thrive instead of survive. Because I tell you what, when you're not in good health, you literally are surviving. Mm-hmm. And that is a frustrating place to be in. I have to tell you that I don't know that this is necessarily a medical condition. I don't like the heat. If here in Santa Barbara, I mean, I moved from Phoenix where I grew up with the heat. I still remember June 26th, 1990, 122 degrees in the shade. And I was out on my bicycle going from work to home. I didn't know what the temperature was. But I moved here to Santa Barbara, and when it goes over 80, I can't stand it. It's like, I want to move again. I got to go further north where it's colder. And so I can't really... I can't go out and do the things that I want to do when it's hot. I mean, when it's 80 plus, I just don't, because I don't feel comfortable when I'm sweating. But that's what the body's natural processes are. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the air cool, the evaporative cooler kicking in. And yet I want to be out there and I want to be building this, or I want to be fixing that, or I want to be doing all of these different outdoor activities around the house. And it's so frustrating when I can't. But I'll tell you, it's even worse when I had a torn meniscus several years ago. And I went in for the surgery and done, and I was walking the same day. And within less than a month, all of the post-op pain and all that was gone. And I have had no problems since. And I love it. it's fantastic that that pain and the swelling and all of that stuff that went along with it isn't there anymore, and I can go do the things that I want to do. And then if I get that latent bruising like I was telling you about, and oh man, now I'm going to be, where's my cane? And that's frustrating.
It's frustrating, but it's also so wonderful when you go from that place of, you know, from pain to no pain.
Yeah.
You know, when you go from surviving to thriving. And that's really what our focus on is, how can we get the brain out of survival so that you can thrive in your life again?
Now, are there, and again, I asked about before and after, but have you, in any kind of a surveying or questionnaire prior to the classwork, the coursework that you offer, five-day intensives?
Yeah.
Do you take any kind of information from individuals? Obviously, it's confidential in that respect. Trying to determine where people are coming from, not just in terms of their physical health, but maybe from where they hail. You know, are they, what part of the country? What kind of, are you living in the urban or rural areas? Your income base, your occupation, all of these pieces of information that may or may not have any relevance whatsoever, and it sounds to me maybe it does not, in why they are experiencing the conditions that they are, as to why they're there in your workshop participating, wanting to say, I've had enough of this. I want a different life.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And we do have, for people that would like to attend our five-day intensives, we do interview everyone specifically. Mm-hmm. And in the interview questions, we're actually asking about history of trauma. So we look at, okay, so prior to developing physical symptoms of illness, right, prior to that, mm-hmm. did you have any viruses or bacteria that never seemed to go away? Did you have renovations done to your home or office? Did you have any psychological trauma? How about emotional trauma? How about chemical trauma and chemical exposures? So we're really looking at, what was that perfect storm for that person?
Hmm.
That's what we call it, the perfect storm. What was the perfect storm that you had before your limbic system went into this unconscious fight or flight mechanism and stuck in that mechanism? So we're looking at, you know, combinations of trauma that have created that perfect storm for the brain to go into that cycle of chronic illness.
I remember.
And predominantly female, for sure. I can tell you that. And the other thing I wanted to say is that we have studies happening at McMaster University in Ontario, and they're looking at a lot of different parameters of, you know, what are those commonalities that people have. But generally speaking, we're looking at trauma in general, like what are the various forms of trauma that created the perfect storm to push your brain into this mechanism.
Mm. I'll share with you very quickly a brief scenario that unfolded in 2001. My present wife was diagnosed with a, and this is all the way they phrased it, the oncologist phrased it, a rare form of fallopian tube cancer. Found out that only a little over 1,200 women nationwide over I don't know how many decades have had this. That's how rare it was, right? And so she was diagnosed. She had the surgery, and then she went through chemotherapy. And during one of her sessions, she happened to overhear some women across the room talking about how, when you have your blood checked for the marker and so forth, if you have two consecutive markers that are in the good range, the normal range where they're supposed to be if you don't have cancer, then you can stop your chemo. So we went to the oncologist and asked about that. And he said, well, no, that's not entirely true, because your form of cancer has a 70% recurrence rate. And as soon as he said that, the first thing that went through my mind was, number one, how in the hell do you know that if it's a rare form and there have only been 1,200 women who've had this? Mm-hmm. And then second of all, I want to see the statistic. I want to see the study. I want to see all of the information on the 70% who had the recurrence and the 30% who didn't. I want to compare their lifestyles. I want to compare where they've lived. All of that stuff I was asking you about before.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we even got to the point where we began to wonder if this was even cancer at all, you know, because the symptoms that she exhibited prior to the surgery, they sure as heck didn't match up with, you know, what we would, we non-medical people thought should be the symptoms of something like this. So anyway, and by the way, she's been free and clear of it ever since. Her markers have been normal. She's had PET scans and so forth, and everything is just beautiful and all of that. But it's those kind of diagnoses that get me to wondering what in the world is going on. And of course, I know it's unfortunately for the vast part of our medical industry, it's all about the money. You know, and so forth. And the same thing with the insurance companies. It's about the money, them getting it from us. And so I ask all of these kinds of questions because sometimes when I hear stuff like that, I just sit there going, wait a minute, what you're telling me is inconsistent with what you told me before. You know, somehow this is not matching up. I need further clarification. I need to better understand. And I want to make sure that what we've done was really the right thing. The biggest frustration, of course, was my wife was trying to get some kind of answers 6 months prior to the diagnosis. And the doctor she was seeing kept putting her off saying, no, it's no problem. There's no problem. There's no problem. Instead of having an ultrasound done, which is what found it. And possibly having caught it in the, I don't know what the early stage would be, a stage one or pre-stage one, whatever, where it was not cancerous, but it could have been, and they could have done something different that would not have been so invasive. That's the biggest frustration of all in that regard. But people go through this all the time. We see stories every day in the news, even our family and our friends, they will go through these kinds of things, and it's so frustrating. And there are certain things that, you know, your program, which, by the way, folks, is called the Dynamic Neural Retraining System, is not going to fix a broken arm. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about really remapping the brain in terms of dealing with all the various, all of the levels of health and wellness that we are experiencing through our lives. I'm curious.
Yeah, that's right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, if there's one thing that I could leave people with, you know, who are listening to this and they're trying to wonder, you know, this is happening to me. Oh, well, yes, I think this is happening to me, or I'm not really sure if this is happening to me. Even if, you know, above and beyond that, what I'd like to talk about is prevention. So how do you prevent the brain from going into that maladaptive chronic stress response? Because some of it we can't control, you know, like, well, we can control our response to stress.
Sure.
So that's true. We can control our response to stress, or we can learn how to deal with stress in a healthier way. But also, you know, just looking at cleaning up your home and your office, like, you know, how lots of people are just completely unaware of the chemicals that they have in their home, that they're using for cleaning, that they use in their laundry, that they, put on their bodies. So really learning what is in the products that you use and how can you create healthier alternatives, because there's always a healthier alternative now, especially in today's day and age, because it's really cool and it's a really new movement to go green. And so we can find all kinds of healthier products for us that don't have toxic ingredients that may cause cancer or that are neurotoxic for the brain. So, you know, a lot of things are found in things that you might deodorizers or scented candles or, Febreze, the whole list, the Tide, the Bounce, the Swiffer Sweepers, all of that stuff, you know, it's pretty neurotoxic. And so we really want to be careful of what we're putting in our homes and on our bodies and in our bodies. And some of those are just really easy fixes. So, yeah, I would like to just, you know, have a shout out to the environment, shout out to the planet, and
please,
shout out to you know, making new choices, making healthier choices so that your brain doesn't go into that fight or flight response to begin with.
There is an alternative, but it isn't sustainable, and that is, okay, you need new clothes, throw out the old ones, just buy new ones. They're clean. And same with your dishes. Just throw them out and buy new ones. That's not sustainable. That's not doable. We've been doing too much of that already, and mm-hmm. we need to make a shift in that regard. I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. Thoroughly enjoyed it, and I would like to invite you, should you find yourself out here on the South Coast, Central Coast of California, Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Well, thank you so much, Richard. It was my pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you.
I want to also let our listeners know that you have a special event. Please recap for us what's going on in Ojai in October.
Yeah, we have a 5-day intensive brain neuroplasticity-based program coming up. It's called the Dynamic Neural Retraining System. It's a 5-day intensive happening from October 22nd to the 26th. If people are interested in attending, they'll have to go to our website at retrainingthebrain.com. And all of the information about that upcoming program will be listed on the website so they can find out the cost and all the variables around that. So we have to interview people well ahead of time and, of course, make sure that they're really prepared to make the changes that are going to be necessary for them to be successful at remapping their brain for health.
And now that's a wonderful retraining that does not require a whip and a chair. So it's a very, very easy kind of thing to do. And before we let you go, I want to ask you three basic questions I have for my guests at the end of every program. And again, thank you so much for giving so much time to us here on the program. Tell me your story. First question is, who is Annie Hopper?
Not a simple question either. Who is Annie Hopper? Well, let's see. I think I'm a medical pioneer. I think I'm a very focused woman who is emblazoned to empower people to heal themselves. And that's who I am.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
That's an easy one. Global healing. I want to provide people with the tools that they need to retrain their brain and reclaim their health and reclaim their life and all over the world, because there are millions of people suffering. So I want my legacy to be that I leave those tools for people so that they have a way out of suffering and they can move from survival to thriving in their life.
And what is your life's purpose?
That's it. To decrease suffering and increase liberation.
There you go. There you go. Final question. Do you take insurance? That would be one nice thing to get rid of entirely. If we could just take care of whatever basic health issues and conditions that we have via our brains, we wouldn't need insurance, wouldn't need to use it. I know why it's there. It took me years to get to that space because I always felt like with whatever insurance it was, if I was in Vegas, I wouldn't make this bet. I'm betting, for example, life insurance. I'm betting I'm going to die. Well, I know that's going to happen someday. Hopefully way in the future, when the insurance company's betting that I'm going to live. It's like, wait a minute. Shouldn't I be betting that I'm going to live? But I digress a little. Again, thank you so much, Annie Hopper. That website that we want to send you to, and obviously they can get information in regards to the seminar, the workshop that you're holding in Ojai in October, and we'll let people know about that. But also they can go to retrainingthebrain.com. There's also wiredforhealing.com, and that's in reference to what we've been talking about, remapping the brain to recover from chronic and mysterious illnesses. Annie Hopper, once again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Richard. Have a great day.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, Love, Talal.